If you're going to build a podcast, first and foremost, not everyone should. And quite frankly, even if you think a podcast would be good for your business, it doesn't mean that you should be the host of that podcast. Like in my opinion, podcasting is an incredible growth tool. It is absolutely, like, people talk about blogging being like a long-term game, right? Podcasting is a longer-term game in my perspective, right? Meaning you can attract and retain an incredibly loyal audience, but it takes...
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Real Estate Law Podcast. Jason Muth here with Pride Away Stays and Straightforward Short-Term Rentals. Our resident attorney is here, Rory Gill. Rory, how are you enjoying this snow day that we're having today that never happened?
It's not much of a snow day. It's not much of a snow winter, for that matter. But no. Not to date the podcast, it's, you know, we have some flurries outside, and that means we're all at home with a snow day.
Yeah, we don't have any flurries today. I can't wait to get into some technical issues that we had today, you know, with our guest who I've wanted to get on this podcast for many, many months. I first reached out to him back in August of last year, I believe it was, when we joined Hospitality.fm, which is our amazing podcast network led by the one and only Will Slickers. And I saw Will last week at the conference, which, Zach, you were not at, unfortunately, but I did hear some of your recap episode, which actually featured Will. But this is Zach. Zach, say your last name for us. It's Booze Cruise. Did I get that right?
Boozy Cruise. Yeah, like a booze cruise with an extra Z in there. You got close, what? Which is, you know, more than most people do.
What an amazing name that has been bestowed upon you. That's great. Zach hosts Behind the Stays, which is an amazing podcast. Some of the guests that he's had on just floor me as to how you've gotten them. So that is definitely a question I'm going to ask you about later. He also runs Spontaneous. Did I get that right?
You got it right. It is a mouthful.
That one is a tongue twister. I had to practice one a couple times. But I reached out to Zach last year, as I mentioned, because I found some of his videos, which we're going to get into in this podcast, and they are so top-notch, the ones he's posted on YouTube, and I couldn't believe this guy was associated with us as being part of Hospitality.fm, so we've been communicating a little bit on LinkedIn. We haven't met in person yet. I was hoping that you'd be at the conference last week, but you weren't there. We had to reschedule a couple times, so, you know, like, I really appreciate your coming on the podcast, Zach.
Well, I just want to first and foremost thank you both for the invitation. And I know the reschedules were all on my part, and it's been a crazy last few months. So I'm just thankful that you guys still wanted to chat with me, even though I typically have like a, hey, cancel on me once, fine. Cancel on me twice, you're out, you're right. But you guys were gracious enough to give me a third opportunity. So hopefully we can bring the heat. Hopefully we can have a good conversation, give people some ideas, share some great stories, and make sure that this was worth everyone's time.
Wait, did you cancel on us twice?
I think I did. Yeah. Cancel. I mean, it was a reschedule both times, yeah. But I did have to, I think, bail twice. So,
you know, Zach is an experienced podcast host. You're how many episodes into Behind the Stays are you?
I think we just published 172.
We're around the same number also with Real Estate Law Podcast right now. And, you know, I don't know if you remember when you first started out as a podcaster, you know, the question was like, where do I find guests, right?
That was
one thing that I thought of early on. And, you know, thankfully we're so blessed that a lot of times the guests come to us, you know, we mix it in with invitations like this, where we intentionally speak to somebody who, you know, we really want to have on the podcast, and we're trying to get a little bit more of that. But the path of least resistance for us is just, you know, put yourself out there and the guest will come to us. I have that same policy about cancellations because, you know, if a guest cancels on us, I kind of don't care because I just move on to the next guest, frankly.
Yeah.
And that happened recently, and we're like, all right, this one. But Rory, when we first started this podcast, I think the very first guest we had didn't show up by accident. Remember that?
Yep. And we were afraid that something was wrong with us, something was wrong with our system, something was, you know, making them run away. But it turns out it was just an innocent error on that particular guest part. And we had her back and she was wonderful. But that was, we were a little nervous if that's how we started.
Right. We thought that like guests were just going to bail all the time. And we've had so much gratitude with our guests. I mean, like, we've spoken with well over 100 people, and man, the amount of times we get a no-show is just minuscule, single digit, if that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. And you know, I feel like podcasting is this funny thing, and this is one of the things I've shared with folks in my network who have been like, "Hey, like, should I start a podcast? Like, why should I start a podcast? Aren't there too many podcasts?" Right? I think podcasting is like the best networking tool that there is. Right? Like, I can go and try to get a coffee, try to get a Zoom chat, right, with anybody in the industry. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to say no because they're busy. Like, you know, somebody that's, you know, interesting to me and somebody that, you know, I like to talk to. But if you invite that same person to spend that same amount of time with you, right, but on a podcast, they say yes 9 out of 10 times, right? And it's just like this like funny, crazy dynamic that like people, I don't know what it says about us as humans that we like to, we're willing to talk to people if other people are going to then hear our conversation, right? And then we might not be willing to talk to that same person if it was just kind of a one-on-one Zoom chat. But anyways, I think it's a phenomenal networking tool. And to your point, it is remarkable how few cancellations there actually are. And I think the medium is just very well respected by people, which I appreciate.
Yeah. How did you feel early on with your podcast, like those first couple episodes that nobody listened to? You know, because you probably, I mean, you're everyone does the same thing, right? You do a few episodes, you have all the great intention of the world, putting out this great podcast with a certain topic, and you know, you start to kind of open it up with guests, or you're talking to your co-host or anything. And then a few episodes in, you're like, is anyone really even listening to this? And then 90% of podcasters stop, right? They say, I'm done. Nobody is really listening to this. This isn't worth my time. Things come up. Things get rescheduled. Next thing you know, you're just in the podcast graveyard, like lots of podcasts are. But how did you make it over that hump where it is, where you knew that you were on the pathway to where you are today with Behind the Stays?
Yeah. So I feel like I had a little bit of an advantage here because I actually started a different podcast in a totally different industry. The podcast was called the Enrollify Podcast, and it was in higher education. So I'm a growth marketer by trade. I spent a lot of time working at an agency in this space that pretty much exclusively worked with higher education institutions. We'd help with all their, you know, branding, all of their enrollment marketing campaigns, et cetera. And I saw this opportunity to that I think a lot of people saw, right? Which was like, hey, media and creating like in-house media is the way to market, right? If you build really great content and you can organically attract your right customers, this is kind of like a nod to inbound and content marketing, right? But even more so, I feel like media, like building sort of like a little media empire is the new like inbound marketing. What inbound marketing was in 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, building a media entity is today. So anyways, I saw this opportunity and worked with my CEO at the time, who I was really good friends with, and ended up launching this podcast. We ended up building it into a small media company in and of itself. And then we were able to sell it to a CRM company in the space just this last October. So all that is to say is I got to start podcasting actually back in 2019. And I think our first episode published like January of 2019 on that show. And so I went through the motions of being like, there's nobody listening to this. Like, why am I doing this? Like, you know, I remember being so excited when like 10 people like listened to it. And then it was like 50. I was like, oh my gosh, 50 people listened this week. And it was just this like huge moment. And I don't think that happened until like episode like 10 or 12 or something for that particular show. And anyways, we ended up growing that show into a full-fledged network of shows. And again, then sold that. So all that is to say is when I started Behind the Stays, I knew it was going to take a while before anyone would pay attention, right? So, and I had listened to some other podcasts in this space, some great podcasts in the space, many of which are, you know, part of the Hospitality FM network now. And I knew like that, you know, it was going to take a while to punch at that level. And so I think my expectations were just tempered, quite frankly. And you know, I did want to see growth, obviously, as we all do. And so I had heard somebody say at one point, like, hey, initially podcasts, people listen to podcasts because of the guests that you bring in, right? But then people stay listening to your podcast because of you, like because of the host. And so that sort of like framework, I was like, okay, if I can just attract enough interesting people, because I'm not interesting in this space right now, nobody knows who I am. If I just get enough interesting people in, and then if I, you know, am interesting, at least somewhat, they might come back for that second or third, that third episode. And then if I remain interesting enough to listen to, at least they'll eventually stick around and they'll eventually grow to trust me. So anyways, that was like the rough framework that I used to keep me motivated when, again, 5, 10, 15 people were listening to the podcast at the time.
So if the podcast is kind of the, you know, the cornerstone of inbound marketing and a good inbound marketing effort, what advice do you have to people? What advice do you have for people who want to take that and actually convert it into business?
Yeah. Oh gosh, that's a good question. I would say if you're going to build a podcast, first and foremost, not everyone should. And quite frankly, even if you think a podcast would be good for your business, it doesn't mean that you should be the host of that podcast. Like in my opinion, podcasting is an incredible growth tool. It is absolutely, like, people talk about blogging being like a long-term game, right? Podcasting is a longer-term game in my perspective, right? Meaning you can attract and retain an incredibly loyal audience, but it takes so much time and it takes so much. You guys know this, right? Like, it takes prep. You have to be on. Like, my son last night, right? He woke up 5 times in the night. I've been up since 3 a.m. I'm exhausted. But if I showed up to this conversation like I actually feel right now, everybody would be having a pissy time, right? And it wouldn't be good for anybody. So, like, you kind of, there's an element of, like, needing to, like, be on, right, all the time. So just because you think a podcast could work for your business, a podcast might work for your business, right? I think first and foremost, you have to say, who's the right host for this podcast? And I'd argue to say that most of the time it's not actually the CEO of the company. A lot of CEOs want to have podcasts because it's kind of like the cool, like, you know, hip thing to do, I guess. But unless you like having conversations, unless you're really, 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 really good at chatting with people, unless you're really good at listening, quite frankly, you're not going to be a good podcast host. So it's first and foremost, you got to find the right host. And then in terms of converting listeners or audience into customers, what I would say is the best long-term game is, don't ever talk about your product. And I know that sounds crazy to people, but the minute you start talking about your product, and I hear people do this on podcasts I listen to all the time, they think they're being sneaky by, like, inserting something like, yeah, I mean, yeah. And so, like, it's really interesting. Like, that's why we built this tool, you know, to solve that problem, Rory, that you just mentioned, right? And they think they're being subtle, but any savvy listener knows exactly what they're doing. And it feels weird. It feels uncomfortable. And in fact, I actually lose respect for people that do that. So I don't have a great answer to your question, in short, Rory, other than it's an incredible strategy for building your credibility as a voice worth listening to in an industry. And if that is your objective, right, and people buy from people that they trust, if that is your objective, that will happen, and that will happen over time. But don't pitch your product on your podcast. Don't pitch your product on your podcast.
Credibility is so important here, not just in the podcast, but, you know, speaking about the STR Wealth Conference, for example, which was in Nashville. This is the third one they've had. I was there for the second year in a row. And I heard part of your recap. Will was talking about some of the sponsors that, you know, part of their sponsorship is they can get on stage and,
yeah,
you know, talk about whatever they want. And I totally concur with what he said. The people that actually gave value in their speeches, even though it was kind of a paid slot, those were the better speakers that were from the vendor floor, and the vendors that were on stage just kind of talking about pitching their stuff. It's the same thing as being on a podcast. You know, like, when we hear from people that want to be on, usually they have an agenda, right? But this is no different from going on The Late Show, you know, with Stephen Colbert. You don't just show up on The Late Show. Like, you have a movie to pitch, right? You have something that you're presenting. The musical artists usually have a new album coming out, right? So that's the understanding, is that they have something new to talk about.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay to talk about your product, whatever your product is, but, you know, we should shroud it with lots of content and lots of value. Like, you know, talking to you, you know, we haven't even talked about Spontaneous just yet, but we will in a second. You know, you're giving a really good glimpse behind the scenes of Behind the Stays, for example. You know,
you're a new
dad. I mean, I think I saw your son on one of your social medias. How old is he? About a one? Is that right?
Yeah. He's like 13. Yeah. 13, 14 months. Yeah.
You know, we've been there. You know, Rory is probably has a little almost 5-year-old running around to his right now because they called school off today for a snowstorm that never happened. You know, so we're like, all right, what do we do now? You know, we'll just have to entertain her. But she has appeared on this podcast many times, you know, during situations like this. Your son probably will at some point. And, you know, you gave us, if you're watching this episode, you see Zach in this really fancy podcast studio, which happens to be what?
It happens to be the closet in my son's now room. So I lost, when my son was born, I lost my office. And we was able to negotiate keeping the closet so I could podcast somewhere.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right, so let's move on to the video component of Behind the Stage. I don't know if you have a different name for what I found online, but the very first exposure I had to you, Zach, I was watching the episode you did with Sam Parr from My First Million and The Hustle, and I've been a huge fan of his and the newsletter since it came out. You know, like I was, I don't know, like when The Hustle sold lifetime subscriptions years ago, I signed up for one of them, so I just keep getting that. And they put that there was another newsletter that they just sunsetted because they were purchased by HubSpot. But first of all, how did that episode come about with Sam? Because like I thought it was super cool that you were talking to him at a property that I think it was his property. He was planning on building an Airbnb business out, which he didn't do. He did something else instead. But then you kind of parlayed that into a couple of the really, really, really well produced video episodes online.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, thank you. So the Sam Parr story is kind of a funny one. The and actually, I'll tell a story on this podcast that I don't think I've told anybody else. And just because I'm remembering for the first time. So how it started was I've been a huge fan of My First Million and The Hustle for a long time as well, right? And I remember when I joined Trends, which was their like private, like paid community, right? That they had. And I think that they actually still do have Trends, even though HubSpot now owns them. And in Trends, I loved connecting with people, and so I connected with lots of folks. I'd bounce, ideas off of them, and it was like a Facebook group is really what Trends was. It was like a paid private Facebook group of people that liked to build things, young entrepreneurs. So when the idea for Spontaneous first came about, my wife and I like lived full time on Airbnb for about 18 months during COVID. So we just hopped around to new Airbnbs, and we booked them very last minute because we had no itinerary. Like, and we were driving everywhere. It was all like domestic, and it was just the two of us at the time, so it was easier to do. We left DC, our apartment in DC, and we were both, working remotely full time. A lot of people did similar things. But what we found is like if we could be really flexible with when and where we went, we could score incredibly like amazing deals at very last minute. We're talking about 50, 60, 70% in some cases off of like the normal like nightly rates of these places. And we started thinking, hey, there's got to be like people that would want to know that these deals exist. Like if you have flexibility, like why isn't there a Scotts cheap flights for Airbnbs was sort of like our thinking. And so we spun up a landing page and sent it out to the internet to see if anyone would care about it. And Sam Parr found that. So I posted that. I posted it in Trends. Sam Parr saw that post in Trends. He shared it on his Twitter, and like that's how we got like our first 500 subscribers to the newsletter, right? So that's how that connection was initially made. And then Sam Parr and his co-host Sean Puri talked about Spontaneous on their podcast, My First Million. And we got another boost in subscribers there. And so Sam knew a little bit of me, I guess. I to be frank, I don't even think he remembered who I was. But I sent him a cold email. He is like the master of cold emails. He talks a lot about copywriting. So I basically just like use all of the hacks that he says to use on people. And I sent him a cold email, and I said, "Hey, this is who I am. You've talked about me on this episode. This is, the tweet that you sent out about my newsletter. I want to do this new thing where I want to document you as you build this Airbnb business," because that's what his objective was. His wife also works at Airbnb. So that was the goal. And he responded and he said, "Yeah, come out." And so we flew out and we met him at his ranch in Fredericksburg, Texas, a couple hours outside of 90 minutes or so outside of Austin. And the goal was to basically document, hey, guy sells his company for millions, decides to get into the Airbnb hospitality space. Here's like a case study of like how he did it, right? And then Sam, as he often does, I think like lost a little bit of interest and it moved on to something else. But what was really cool about the story, which I think maybe some of your guys' listeners will resonate with, is on that while I was out there, I got a DM on Instagram from Isaac French, who built Live Oak Lake. So if your listeners aren't familiar with Live Oak Lake, you should go check it out. It's sort of the quintessential like experiential hospitality like case study. He built Live Oak Lake outside of Waco, Texas. So I end up jumping in a car after the interview with Sam, go over, interview Isaac, and I was like, "Isaac, do you know Sam Parr?" He had never heard of Sam Parr. He knew nothing of My First Million or The Hustle. And I was like, "Sam is gonna, eat this guy up. Like this guy is the exact kind of entrepreneur that like Sam loves." So I was able to connect them, And then Isaac sort of like exploded from there on out, which was just really, really, really cool. So anyways, that was a very long answer to your question, but that is the story of how we first got into producing these videos.
Did you bring a camera crew out with you, or how did that all come together? Because I mean, this is professionally produced. This is not iPhone video.
Yeah. So I have a partner in the business who I actually worked with at my old agency, and he is a videographer. So we, you know, he owns equity in the business, and I don't pay him anything. And that's how we make these videos work.
Got it. Yeah. The videos are fantastic. I mean, it almost seems like you've cornered, we'll link to your YouTube page, in the show notes here for anyone that wants to see the ones that you publish, but you know, you're starting to corner kind of the influencer Airbnb. I don't even know what to call it. The experiential Airbnb. These ones that just look so amazing.
Yeah.
And you're capturing stories behind why the hosts are doing what they're doing, how they're doing it, what the properties look like. You know, when you think about gorgeous A-frame on brand color scheme in the middle of the woods,
yeah,
with a container house next door, you know, I mean, something ridiculous like that, but that's like the pinnacle of what you think of when, you know, it's a scroll stopping Airbnb, you know, when you're looking on Airbnb or you're looking on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, the reason for that is like, so we called this series like, you know, the next generation of hospitality entrepreneurs is sort of how we package these videos. And, you know, I think about creators. I don't know if you guys, how many Airbnbs and stuff you follow on Instagram, but you've got folks like Levi Kelly, right? Who's probably like the most well-known Airbnb like influencer. He sort of started the whole like cabin tour thing, where he'd go to a beautiful, ridiculous short-term rental, and he'd film like a walkthrough of like, hey, this is this really cool space, right? And then he published on YouTube. He's got like close to 1 million subscribers on YouTube now. He's sort of the quintessential like Airbnb, original like Airbnb influencer, at least in my opinion. But one of the things I saw, right, as being a podcast host, as being somebody who loves story and interviewing, is this space is beautiful. Like, that's amazing. It looks so cool. But like, who did it? Right? Like, what is the story behind this space? Like, it's cool to see all the design. It's cool to see the incredible like house that is over a waterfall. But I want to talk to the entrepreneur behind this, right? And at the time, like, there wasn't anyone talking to that niche of hospitality entrepreneur, right? There are folks that are incredible, that have built incredible portfolios in the short-term rental space, right? People that are on paper wildly more successful than these individuals, financially speaking, right? And that's amazing, right? And I respect the heck out of that. But there is this kind of like new class of hospitality entrepreneur that is emerging that has recognized that the next generation of travelers really want differentiated experiential opportunities, right? They're willing to spend what they would spend on a Ritz-Carlton or a Four Seasons, but they want to do it in like Hocking Hills, Ohio, in the middle of nowhere at this beautiful, like, you know, bespoke micro resort that has a waterfall connected to it. Like that is where they want to spend their, you know, $900 a night or whatever it is. And so I wanted to document the stories behind the creators and the entrepreneurs that saw this opportunity and were working to bring it to life. So that's sort of the goal of the series. To be honest, to be 1,000% candid with you guys, like, this is expensive stuff and it's hard to get to these places. And I want to keep it going. We'll see how long we can keep it going. Right now, we publish one about every 4 to 6 weeks is like literally all we can afford to do right now. But I do think that there's opportunity. And at the end of the day, I think that these people that, the stories that we're highlighting, these are people that are worth meeting. Like, if you're an investor and you're looking for like an entrepreneur to like invest in, go and watch some of these stories, because what these people are doing is so, so amazing. And we've been able to feature people that are just all like really humble people. Like they're really humble. They're artists, right? And they're working to build really remarkable businesses. So my hope through all of this is just that we can help inspire new connections so that investors can invest in cool entrepreneurs that are building amazing businesses, and these amazing entrepreneurs that are building these cool businesses can keep building these businesses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're highlighting properties that, you know, again, they look fantastic. And one question that just hit me when you were talking, because you said they're sometimes in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Do people who are younger generation, you know, so Gen Z, millennials,
yeah,
I'd say, because I'm Gen X, are they willing to travel to, it doesn't matter where it is, as long as it's a cool house?
So I before COVID, I would have said no. I think COVID taught us that yes, like they are. And I mean, during COVID, obviously a lot of people got into the short-term rental game that, you know, weren't in it previously. A lot of my network and friends and whatnot had exits from with their companies during, you know, 2020, 2021. They made a little bit of extra money. They wanted to invest in real estate, but not do it like mom and dad did. They wanted to, you know, buy land and build some cool A-frame that they could document on Instagram, right? That was like, that wasn't just like an isolated story. Like that was a lot of people's story. And so anyways, to answer your question a little bit more specifically, I actually do think that there is something to be said for people that are willing to travel to the middle of literal nowhere to stay at an Airbnb that they found on Instagram. And I think the only you only have to go and spend a little bit of time on Instagram and see that. I mean, there are accounts with hundreds of thousands of followers, millions of followers, and it's a singular container home. Like I talked to Devin Lorup, who's a really good example of this. Devin Lorup, he created the Pacific Bin. If you haven't seen the Pacific Bin, it's literally like the most followed Airbnb on social media. He's got well over 1 million followers. And Devin, the way that he grew is he just documented the whole build of this. He took five shipping containers and built this like ridiculous stay in like an hour north of Seattle in Washington. And I think what Devin proved, right? And oh, and by the way, like 80% now of his bookings come from Instagram. Like people that find his stay on Instagram, they go and they book directly with him, and they cite Instagram as like the way that they discover Devin. So point being, I absolutely think that there is something about the novelty and it's almost like maybe Gen X and maybe boomers, they cared a lot about like airline status, right? And like, hey, what, you know, your Bonvoy status with Marriott or whatever it was. This next generation cares, oh, I stayed. Oh, that Instagram, that A-frame that you follow on Instagram? Yeah, I stayed there. Like, here's my photo, right? And that is like, that holds the same clout as, you know, having gold status on like, you know, United might have. So I do think that there's this like transition happening. To be frank, do I think at the end of the day it matters more than the location? No. I for the vast majority of travelers, no. But if I was building something from the ground up today, I would absolutely go find a piece of land 2 hours outside of a major metropolitan area, and I build something unique there over trying to acquire or build or, you know, buy whatever it is, 5 to 7 units in a city. Like that is the playbook that I would follow today.
Hey, Rory, I think Zach is status shaming me and my generation because yes, we were very into our status. I actually used to write a blog. It's still out there called Platinum Elite. Yeah, I
Gonna
was.
have to go find that.
I didn't even know what I said on it, but like it was Blogger, right? You know, this is back in the 2000s when I was traveling for my job. Rory, I think you probably found it, right? That's when we met, like back then.
Well, you showed it to me.
Oh, I did.
It's not something that I would have found out on my own. But
Oh, Platinum Elite. Yeah, but that was, I mean, I was Platinum on Continental Airlines for like 5 or 6 years. You hold that, you know, you walk into the airport, you got your big, like, you feel like you're like the stuff, you're walking down there, you're getting upgraded 2/3 of the time. You're like, you know, when you're not upgraded, you're like, what do you mean I'm not upgraded? I'm Platinum. Who are these people sitting in my seats? And yeah, life goes on, right? And now I just flew Southwest back from the conference and I treated myself to $50 the day before to be able to get in boarding group A, you know. So that's where things have changed with our priorities. Maybe it's children, maybe it's older age. You'll learn this too, Zach. I mean, I love hearing kind of your life pre-child, right? You know, oh yeah. And you know, people my age think of that everyone your age is like this. Oh yeah, you know, we worked remotely everywhere. We would just take off. We drive wherever we want to. You know, nothing tying us down, right? We're always in Airbnbs. You know, we're living this fabulous lifetime in container homes around the country. And now you have a son. I'm sure
No,
things are a little
we're
different
recording
now.
podcast in a closet.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, Rory and I just built a house actually last year.
Wow,
And
amazing.
you know, Rory, you can kind of attest to a little bit of that build process. Like, it sounds so easy, right? But it wasn't, was it?
It wasn't easy. It's a lot more complicated. You're dealing with a lot more moving pieces. There's more capital that has to be put up, in the beginning. But at the same time, location was important. It was near a lake. It's a tried and true area.
Okay.
But it wasn't the premier area where people for generations have been putting up camps and houses. It wasn't the best lake. It wasn't the biggest lake. But by building a house that stood out, it's performed very well.
Yeah.
And that's where I think if there's something for people to take away from what you said there, is the location may not matter as much so long as it's near something else that is near where people come from.
Yeah.
Because that's where you can find that bit of land. That's where you can find that relatively inexpensive deal and go from there instead of trying to compete for, you know, waterfront on the premier lake.
Yeah. What I would just add to that too is, like, I think that when people think about, like, does the location matter more than the house, and you know, should we get something in the city versus 2 hours outside of the city, whatever it is, I think something to remember is that there are a lot of young professionals, right, who do have a fair amount of disposable income that are willing to, like, my friends, right, people will go and they'll get a Wander type home, right? Like, if you guys are familiar with Wander, right? I don't think I have had any friends actually stay at a Wander, but like a ridiculous, like, beautiful, like, home, right? Kind of in, you know, off the beaten path a little bit, and they'll just rent it out for the week, and they'll all just work remotely from there, right? So meaning, like, this is not like a vacation, like, they're not like taking vacation to go do this. They're all still working. So what they're looking for, right, is like a place with good Wi-Fi, of course. Like, you've got to have reliable Wi-Fi. And that is one of the hard things about some of these, like, more remote places is, like, and I think Starlink is actually going to, you know, it has already been huge and will continue to be huge for some of this. But, like, at the end of the day, you're not, I think when people argue the location, when people engage in the conversation around location, it's typically like, okay, yes, but at the end of the day, when you're going to beach week, like, there are only so many places, like, to go that are, like, on the beach, right? And I think that that's the wrong way of thinking about this question is, like, no. If you're going to build something from the ground up, you're not just trying to build for the vacationer. You're actually, there's this whole new market of, like, of traveler, of, like, flexible traveler, who is literally, they have a awesome, cool little, like, place in Brooklyn, right? But they want to go with their buddies and they want to book a place in the Catskills for a week. And it's not a vacation. They just want to work from there. They're just looking for great Wi-Fi, good views. If there's a water feature, that's a bonus. The campfire has to be epic, right? And the design of the home has to be on point. And if all of those things are matched, they'll drop a pretty penny to come there for the week. Again, it's not vacation. So I just think that these dynamics, right, what COVID did, still, I know that there's a lot of people still in hybrid roles or and whatnot, but still there is a huge, huge number, 30%+ of the workforce is still able to be flexible with their job right now. And I don't think that that's going to dramatically change in the next 5 years. So if I was building, or I was thinking about building something, I'd rely on that as a trend that is going to stick.
When we were planning this house, we've been planning this house out for, when did we buy the land, Rory? 6 years ago? I mean, it's been a while. We've had this land, and it was land next. It was next door to our very first short-term rental, and our thinking was, if anyone's going to buy it, it's going to be us because we want to control it.
Yeah.
So we did, and we added on a second parcel when the town had a budding unit available for tax taking. So we bought that too, which was great because then we put the footprint on the house in a little bit better of a spot. But we had purchased plans just from a random company online, you know, with kind of what our vision was for, you know, this house. We want to have like a big grand room, big vaulted ceilings. And then, Rory, you'll remember this. We took that COVID trip to upstate New York, the Adirondacks. We went camping like everybody did, Zach, right?
Yeah.
we towed around an Airstream, you know, with an 18-month-old in it, which I would not recommend. But we did it. Rory did all the driving because I wanted nothing to do with driving that thing with the Airstream behind us. But we stayed in some COAs and some, you know, great, beautiful New York State campgrounds. And on that trip, boy, Rory, you sent me down a rabbit hole.
I did. I mean, that area had a lot of just beautiful timber and log cabins. And that is something we thought of because it would fit that bill. It would be that, you know, that really interesting house for people to stay in. So we saw a lot of that architecture while we were up there. And then we kind of got wedded to that idea. And then, of course, lumber prices spiked, which put all of that kind of construction completely out of reach. So then we, after going down that rabbit hole for a while, returned back to a more traditional drywall build. But that was that's the rabbit hole that I think, Jason, that I took you down on.
I mean, we still love the Adirondack style. You know, I'd still like to do that someday. And we ran down the log home, you know, not just, you know, not just like making it look like a log home. We want to actually get a log home. I still get emails from these log home companies and they have beautiful log homes, but I couldn't find a builder in New Hampshire that could do it, like for the price point that we wanted. So we ended up punting on that. I, you know, suddenly ran down the container home route because I'm like, I love the look of these container homes. I got to do a container home at some point. Didn't do that either. Circled way back to where we started in the first place, which was the plans that we purchased. And we're like, let's make this look Instagrammable. So this isn't the best picture, but this is one of the lead pictures on Airbnb. I'm going to hold it up for people that are watching. But, you know, it's got that
look. Oh, beautiful.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's 100%.
It's got the look. And all the look is the triangle windows and the triangle frame on the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been touched by the gods of Airbnb with this property because we are consistently on the top four cabin views throughout New England, right? So the amount of views that we're getting are just off the charts. Impressions are really high when you look at analytics. That might change as time goes on and other better properties pop on there. But man, this thing has performed so well. We've been booked both near term, further out. You know, we have more summer bookings than I thought I'd get that I just have to keep raising the prices because I'm like, God, what are people willing to pay for this thing? And we've been booked. And this is in a town that is, it's a growing town in New Hampshire. It's within 2 hours of Boston. There's nothing going on in the town otherwise besides the lake across the street and it being within driving distance to, you know, local stores, amenities, hiking. You know, it's an hour to a great ski mountain. It's a half hour to hiking. There's, you know, it's beautiful in the area. Yeah. But it's not the kind of place that is the Smokies or, you know, Austin or Palm Springs or any of these like really hot markets.
Yeah.
I just think that I've gotten a lot of people that have stayed here because they saw the pictures and they said, we want to be in a large house like this that could sleep 12 to 14 people. It doesn't really matter where it is. It's like, what's there to do in the area? They ask me the question all the time, but they want to stay in that house.
Yeah.
So somehow we captured that magic with this one property and everything you've said makes me want to go like, build 10 more container houses somewhere, you know, like, and build that kind of house. Cause you have so much experience in working with influencers in this space. And, you know, you're speaking of a generation of people that travel in this manner. So it's like, my ideas are going there too.
Well, what's crazy on that last thing, I know we probably have other things to talk about, but is that you talk to some of these influencers? Like I was at the Cliffs at Hocking Hills, which I think they've done something really, really remarkable with what they've built. They're like the Instagram famous, like waterfall Airbnbs. They like build water features is like their thing. Anyhow, they are booked through 2025. Like meaning like these, and they only have 4 units right now, right? And like they're aggressively trying to, like, they're raising money right now because they want to, you know, build more. But like, point being is that, and you talk to Devin, you talk to these unique state people, and like they're consistently so booked. And like their biggest problem is that it costs a lot, right, to build something that is Instagrammable in the way that they want to build it, right? And that's the biggest friction point. So, but once it goes live, it gets booked, and it almost doesn't matter what the price is. And that's just what's so interesting about this new class of hospitality entrepreneurs. They're like, hey, forget about like expenses for a second and just think about like, okay, but how much revenue could you bring in, right, per night with a stay like this? Could you push $1,000 a night for a 380 square foot treehouse? The answer is, if you talk to Ben Wolf from Onera, I've been there, like I've seen it. Yes. Yes. Can you be booked 85, 90%? Yes. Right. And so if you kind of shift the framing of like thinking about, okay, yes. And of course it costs a lot to keep these properties up. These properties cost a lot to build to begin with. But if you slightly change your framing of like, okay, but what do we think it could do from a revenue standpoint? Then you figure out like where your costs need to be to make sure that, you know, the margin is worth it. But so often like we approach all these things with like a cost mindset, right? An expense mindset rather than like a potential revenue mindset. So anyways, yeah, I get jazzed about this stuff. And if anyone is looking for even just like partners in the space, right? If you've got some capital and you will want to go learn from some of these people, and or if you just want to invest in their projects, like, again, I have no affiliates with any of these people. This is just like, they're just remarkable. And I'd love to connect with you with them if you're interested.
I also just love like this generational thinking difference, because I'm thinking expenses, right? That's just how I grew up. It's like, and you know, like tech entrepreneurs and people that are growing businesses are like, I don't care what the expenses are, grow the top line. What's the revenue? Revenue, revenue, revenue. And I'm like, well, what's the delta? Because you got to pay your bills too. Like, how much is the insurance? So yeah, there's probably some happy medium between, you know, getting some folks involved that, you know, are a little more cautious in their thinking, and some that are just growth minded.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, like you just, you know, raise a lot of ideas. Everyone in this industry talks about, you know, memorable short-term rental experiences, and even, you know, the OTAs are all talking about what is the experience that they could sell to you, you know, when you're going to somewhere unique. And
Yeah.
that's what they sell in all of their update videos. That's what they sell in their online advertising, you know, their TV advertising. It's always like the unique experience. Actually, Vrbo has an amazing campaign happening right now, I think, where they're talking about, you know, when you book a Vrbo, you get the whole house. It's either, I think it's Vrbo that did this, where, you know, when you put the kid to bed, you can go downstairs and still kind of enjoy the rest of the house. Or maybe Airbnb did that. I should know, because one of those two companies actually was selling against hotels. And as you might know, as we know, a lot of times we book the king bed and the kid sleeps right between the two of you. But guess what? When the kid goes right to bed, you're going to bed too, unless you can go somewhere else. You know, so parents definitely can look at a campaign like that and say, yeah, that's probably how I want to travel. Put the kid to bed in the bedroom upstairs in the private home I'm renting, and then I still get to stay up another couple hours instead of just all of us living in this 300 square foot hotel room.
No, 100%.
All right, so let's talk about Spontaneous before we start to wrap up the podcast. Tell us about the business. Like, what is it? When did you start it? Why should people join it? What have you seen as someone that's operated this for a couple years now?
I mean, in short, it was really just wife and I were traveling, Airbnb hopping, realizing like, well, we could score some really amazing discounts if we waited to book until like the last minute. So that was the idea. I've been a travel like nerd for a long time, and you know, circling back to our earlier conversation, Jason, I also still care about status on airlines, and I do care about my Bonvoy points and all that jazz. So, but we, you know, we were traveling around. We were able to stay in these incredible spaces that we otherwise like wouldn't have been able to afford, and I, being a travel nerd, had followed Scott's Cheap Flights for a long time. And for those who aren't aware, they recently rebranded to Going. But the premise of Scott's Cheap Flights is basically what it sounds like. You sign up, you get a newsletter, and you choose your airport, and they send you offers that are like crazy mistake fares and or just like last minute deals to different locations around the world. They're a totally bootstrapped business. They've grown a ton. They've got like 80 employees now. Just a very, very kind of like impressive story there. So I have loved them for years. And so when we were on the road, I was wondering why there wasn't why there wasn't a Scott's Cheap Flight for Airbnbs. So we decided to build this and test it out. So we did it. We launched it. Got some immediate attention, which was really cool. And in short, what Spontaneous does today is we send last minute deals on Airbnbs, Vrbos, Booking.com. You know, pick your OTA of choice, and we're scraping every couple hours the best deals from these respective platforms, and then sending them to users depending on what areas of the country they want to follow. So if you want to follow, you know, deals in Boothbay Harbor, Maine, that are available for 7 days or more, and then you want to follow deals in New York City. Well, not New York City, that's a bad example because you can't follow those deals anymore. But Austin for 3 nights or more, you can subscribe, and then every day you'll get deals, the best last minute deals on short-term rentals in Austin for 3 nights and in Maine for 7 nights. So that's sort of what Spontaneous is. And then how we work with property managers, how we work with hosts, how we work with investors is if a user has decided to follow a particular stay, a particular area where you have a stay, we'll have your stay verified and like show up at the top of the newsletter for people that are following that stay. So we're not a booking channel. Like you can't, no one can book through Spontaneous. We're really just another marketing channel for folks to feature their properties to folks who are flexible travelers. So every deal that shows up on Spontaneous is sometime within the next 30 days. So we'll never feature a deal beyond 30 days. So that's just, again, a little bit of how the business works. It's super bootstrapped, totally homegrown. I'm finally able to do it full time, which was a huge win. So, yeah, again, we're still faking it till we make it for sure. If anyone has ideas for us, would love to have them. But yeah, it's been a wild ride. It's been incredibly exciting to see how the business has grown, how we've been able to help just like serve like really, really cool deals to people who otherwise might have missed them in their search on Airbnb.
And it looks like you guys are a subscription model, right? Where you're not taking a cut of the gross revenue, but you're just taking a subscription fee for the host. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So our host partners, they, you know, I think our lowest tier starts at like $49 a year. And basically that, you know, just guarantees that anytime your listing is available in the next 30 days, it'll show up in front of anybody that's following that particular region of the world. So yeah, that's how it works. We don't take any sort of like cut. And again, a big reason for that is 'cause we're not a booking site, and it's really difficult. There are affiliate links and stuff, but we tried that. We started that way. And people's tech just wasn't as reliable as we had hoped it would be. Airbnb and Vrbo and these OTAs, by the way, they are just incredible companies. It's like what they've built, it's just truly, truly, truly remarkable. And getting into this a little bit and trying to replicate some aspects of these platforms just shows you how complicated and how robust all of this is. So yeah, it's a subscription only sort of deal.
I appreciate the book direct movement, but you just said it right there. There is a level of appreciation to what these online travel agencies have built, and I don't mind paying what they ask me for in terms of fees as an
Yeah.
owner, because they make it simple. Now you are beholden to them, right? You don't want to screw up and make them angry and get delisted or shadow banned or anything. But like as long as you don't do that, they take care of a lot of that heavy lifting for you. Obviously
Yeah.
the book direct the book the whole book direct thinking, and if you can get 80% of your listings off of Instagram because you have an awesome place, all the power to you. You own your audience. That's
Yeah.
great. But not everyone does that. Like that's a very small percentage of people that have short-term rentals. We're all trying to get direct bookings, but hey, there's a lot that's coming from these OTAs. They're so big, they spend so much money, and they're really driving a lot of traffic to us. But you have another traffic driver right here. What's interesting to me, I wonder if people around the country or around the world, does it matter where you are to list with Spontaneous? Like, or do you think that somebody in a town that's not searched upon that much would still have some success listing on your property site?
Yeah, so what's like re what's really interesting is we have this other feature, this product called Statewatch, and Statewatch is sort of like Google Flight Alerts, but for Airbnbs. So if you think about like if you've used Google Flight Alerts, you say, "Hey, I want to go here for these specific dates." Maybe you have some flexibility in the dates, and then Google will just like send you emails of flights that match your criteria. So we've done the same thing for short-term rentals, and what's been cool about that is like seeing people like create trips. So people will say, "Hey, I want to go to, London, and I want to go for these 4 days, but I'm flexible plus or minus 3 days on the front end or the back end, and I want to spend between $200 a night or $1,000 a night." So what's really cool is like we're getting all this really interesting data on like where people want to go, when they want to go there, right? Their flexibility that they have and what they want to spend. And then what we're able to do is if that criteria matches any of our host partners, we're able to like make an introduction and say, "Hey, Rory wants to go to London during these dates. This is his budget, Jason. You might want to increase your nightly rate because he's willing to spend up to $1,000 a night or whatever it is." And then we can make that intro, and then you can get, Rory's direct contact info if that's something that you desire. He can book direct with you if you have that option. And so anyways, point being that as these stay watches have come in, what we are seeing is we're seeing people looking for like deals in really like remote places. Like we're seeing or the radius that they're willing to stay. They might be able to stay within a 120-mile radius of like a London, for example, right? And so this data is, and again, I want to be super transparent here. We launched this product, I believe it was late fall or early fall, and we currently have like four, I just looked before this chat, we have like 456 people that are actively searching for a trip right now, right? So that have created a Statewatch. So these numbers are not like 40,000 by any means, right? But this intel is still really interesting in understanding where people want to go and what they want to spend. And my dream is, hey, if you want to own your customer data, I'd love to be able to leverage the power that Airbnb has, but then give you that contact information of the prospective guests. And we're able to do that for folks, which is really, really cool. But I'm right there with you, Jason. Like personally, Airbnb offers such an incredible service for a very, 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 very low cost. And I quite frankly just don't understand why so many people hate them on the host side. I really, really don't understand the eyeballs that your listing, right, is seeing. You couldn't pay anything even close to what you're technically paying for that on any other platform in the world. And that's just truth, right? So anyways, I'm sort of with you there. I think that a little bit of the book direct movement is a little blown out of proportion, and most people are better off building an incredible product and then leveraging OTAs as best as they can.
Yeah. Before we get to the final questions, here's our bonus question. How are you using AI to improve your business these days? And why will AI not put you out of business?
Gosh, you just come right for the jugular, man. So how are we using AI right now? So in short, one of the ways that we're using AI very simply is we have a little plugin that it's still in development, but we've been building to essentially just help us get better data from Airbnb. Now, what's hard, right, is Airbnb's APIs are closed to ChatGPT, and I don't see them opening anytime in the near future. So we had this like little simulation where our scrape, the way that we scrape Airbnb, gets pulled into our website, and then that info gets fed back to ChatGPT, and then we're able to just like essentially write better copy, identify listings that might be a better fit for people based off of things that they've clicked on previously. To be totally candid with you, it's very much in its infancy in terms of its, you know, usability. But our goal, quite frankly, is to help make the curation process simpler. At the end of the day, Spontaneous is a curation business, right? What we're trying to do, people get overwhelmed when they go to OTAs, especially if you have flexibility with like where you want to go and when you want to go. We want to make that easier. We want you to be able to tell us everything that you could possibly want, how many bedrooms you're looking for, what your, you know, nightly rate is. And then we want you to tell us that 6 months before you want to travel anywhere. And then we want you to be able to trust us to know that we know your preferences and are only going to send you stays that match your exact criteria over, like, kind of like Zillow does if you sign up for like Zillow Alerts, for example, right? That's ultimately what we're trying to do. So this little plugin that we've built is our first step in that direction. It's far from the finish line. And then how AI could take us out of business, I think that there are a number of ways. I think most, you know, the day that a travel bot is built that can essentially kind of just do what we do, which is like you put in all the custom information that you want, it connects to all the OTAs in a usable way. And then you just say, hey, ChatGPT, or hey, you know, custom GPT, whatever you name it, send me all the, basically do what we do. That could absolutely kill our business. I think that will happen eventually. I think that that's a little bit further out than maybe most people think.
Yeah. It's good you're going down the curation road. I mean, there's just so much analysis paralysis when there's so many options. And we went down the road of iTunes and Amazon having the biggest selection of everything.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's not the best. Sometimes that's way overwhelming. And I am of this, and Rory knows me really well. Like, I'm of the school where I'll look at something that's a big decision, not little ones, little decisions the grocery store have a hard time with, but like big decision. I will make a big decision quickly where it's like, oh, okay, that sounds good. Check it off the list. Let's sign up with these guys, move on. Yeah. Right. That's what, I mean, Rory, like, how easy is that, right?
Well, you know, do I want to buy that house? Let's put in an offer right now. Is way faster than, geez, which brand of ketchup do I want to take?
Like, figuring out the cost per ounce, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to our final couple questions, and then we'll learn where we could learn more about you, Zach. We ask these of all of our guests, really three simple questions to finish the interview up and learn more about you. First one, if you can get on stage for half an hour and talk about any subject in the world with zero preparation, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. I'd probably talk about podcasting and I think the future of the medium.
Okay. Second question, tell us something that happened early in your life or career that impacts the way that you're working today.
I started a nonprofit when I was in eighth grade that focused on raising money for folks affected by the Darfur genocide. And somehow local, and I was actually born and raised in Hawaii. And so I was in Hawaii and we started this little nonprofit after my teacher had talked to us about like the Holocaust and whatnot. And then it was like, well, there's genocide happening right now. Right. And I was like, what? And no one's doing anything about it. And, you know, I was, my eighth grade self thought I was going to like change the world. And so it was able to, you know, raise some money. And then actually like the founders of eBay, Pierre and his wife, Pam Omidyar, they ended up like catching wind of this and they became big supporters. And we were able to build a couple schools in actually like Western Chad. And then Disney like saw it and someone from Disney saw it and they did this feature for us. Anyways, that sort of like a whole little project helped tell me two things. One, I think it just built confidence in me that, like, hey, if you've got an idea, just freaking like run like hell, try to make it happen. And sometimes it will. And then two, I think what it reminded me of is, like, at the end of the day, like, you know, the world is a lot smaller than you think it is. And I think people and connections and networking, right? It's actually a little bit easier than you might think to get into touch with people that might quite literally help change your life. So yeah, that's a quick little story. That I think answers your question decently well.
Oh, I just launched the nonprofit, you know, to save, you know, the crisis.
I don't even think it, I don't even know if it was an official, I don't even know if it was like an official non. The adults in the room like helped do everything, but I was told that, like, yeah, I believe we did get our 501c3 status, but don't quote me on that. We raised a bunch of money and we were able to, like, you know, build some schools, which was cool.
Rory, you did that. I mean, you were an Eagle Scout, right? At least you helped the old ladies across the street or something, right?
Oh yeah, I feel a little
yeah, you
know, inadequate with that story, but
Zach, you buried the lead, man. That's like, mm-hmm. you know, that's like a whole podcast episode around that experience. Like, oh, and the eBay founders, you know, they found mm-hmm. us. You know, Disney did a story about me. You know, like Zac Efron starred in it. Anyway,
all right. That would be a dream. Yeah.
Final question. Tell us something you're listening to, or watching, or reading these days. Anything in the world?
Gosh. You want me to be honest?
Yes, it does not have to be a business book.
Well, I wish I read something else that would probably help my self-esteem and my mental health. But
say it. I know you're gonna say.
I'm like a huge All In Pod fan. And I don't know. Do you guys listen to the All In Podcast? Do you know the All In Podcast?
No.
No? Okay. No. Well, I'm sure some of your listeners do. In short, it's a bunch of tech bros who talk about politics and tech and all the fun things. Jason Calacanis, who was an early investor at Uber. You have David Sachs, who was early at PayPal, who is now at Kraft. You've got Chamath Palihapitiya, who was early at Facebook. And then you've got David Friedberg, who's just like a whiz, like a science whiz. He was behind some Metro Mile insurance company, and he's done some. He was actually at Monsanto for a while. Anyways, point being, what I like about their dynamic is I feel like it's you know, a bunch of dudes talking about stuff, but their ability to engage in hard conversations well, and you know, they kind of span the spectrum, if you will, politically. It's the closest thing to a productive conversation about hard issues that I've found. So, anyways, that's been consuming a lot of my like mind share recently.
Which dude sitting around talking sounds like this podcast right now.
Sounds like every podcast, yeah, unfortunately, right? You know, for better or for worse, sometimes for worse, sometimes for better, but yeah.
Rory, final thoughts for Zach.
I mean, thank you. It's a good story there. And it as a lot of people in the short-term rental space are kind of thinking about what comes next. It's been a, you know, difficult market. Properties are more expensive. The market in a lot of places is oversaturated. The interest rates are high. I think you've kind of laid out an idea of where to go forward. And that might be to center the listing on the house itself. You know, have the location be a consideration. But I think there is an opportunity there for people who either want to improve their stays to make it a memorable stay that stands out, or for people to really reimagine what a potential Airbnb property would look like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would just double click on that. And then the last thing I would say is, like, I think that there's a lot of younger talent in this space that is hungry, that understands what will perform well on social, that understands what the next generation of traveler wants. And you might actually be better off in the next year or two finding some of these people and, you know, writing some checks there into funds that they're starting and or things that they're doing than you would be going and trying to do something, you know, yourself. I again, you guys are a lot smarter at me when it comes to all this stuff. I don't currently, we have got a longer term rental. I don't actually have any short term rentals currently. So, you know, who am I to talk? But what I do see is I do see a lot of people that are building really cool ideas. And I think you might be better off putting a check there than you might be buying your own parcel of land, buying a den design and trying to do something yourself. So anyways, that's my little like hot-ish take.
Well, Zach, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. It was well worth the wait. I'm glad that, you know, we finally got this thing done. We're going to link up all of your websites and social media in the show notes. Spontaneous. is the name of the company. And Behind the Stays is your podcast. You could find that on hospitality.fm, just like you could find the Real Estate Law podcast. You could find that on all the different podcast platforms. And, you know, we really appreciate all of your insights here. I could probably go on for a long time, and we'll have to have you back, you know, for a check-in on your business. If you've appreciated this podcast and this conversation, we love 5-star reviews. So, right, Zach, we got to ask for the 5 stars.
Always, 5-star always. Review. Guys, they really matter. They really, really matter. Give the rating and give the review. It's like literally the best way to grow a podcast.
Yeah, it's just a little non-monetary way you could say thank you, you know, if you've enjoyed listening. And if you want to subscribe to this podcast and Zach's podcast, you could find links to it also on hospitality.fm. If you want to be a guest on this podcast, please go to realestatelawpodcast.com. All of our information's there. Please reach out, say hi. And on behalf of Rory and Zach, this is Jason. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.